Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by Sister Merceditas Ang, President of St. Paul University, Philippines. The university is focused on cutting-edge technology and value innovation. It's won multiple awards from Times Higher Education Impact Rankings, World Universities with Real Impact. It is accredited by the Association of Accredited Schools of Business International, plus dozens of others, including Hall of Fame, most environment-friendly and sustainable school in the region by the Environmental Management Bureau. And Sister Merceditas Ang herself is also extremely accomplished, both in academics as well as being recognized with multiple awards. She has her PhD in Educational Leadership and Management with high distinction, her Master's in Educational Management with high distinction, Bachelor of Laws, Bachelor of Science in Psychology, plus many awards, including the Education Leadership Awardee of CMO Asia, Excellence in Education Award, Global Education Leadership Awardee by the World Education Congress, Outstanding UNESCO Club Educator of the Philippines by UNESCO as well, and many more. So I've asked her to join us here today to talk about innovation, being a high performance achiever, and how we can all reach our full potential. So Sister, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you doing?
Thank you, Daryl.
Yeah, it's an honor.
This is a remarkable show. Thank you for this opportunity.
Yeah, perfect. It's an honor to have you here. Obviously, you're at the heart of a lot, right? It's not just to win those awards and even just to get those degrees, you have to meet standards. Like I think in some days, I don't want to go on a sidebar, but I feel like in some ways, the world is becoming a little bit more participation award versus achievement award. And I just from your track record, I feel like we are similar in that nothing in my life has ever been a participation award. Everything that I have has had to have been accomplished and achieved. And you have a long list of accomplishments. And I want to ask about how did you even get started? Were your parents also very well accomplished, high performance people, or were they big into academics?
Yeah, my parents are both highly accomplished also, and they are in education. But one thing is remarkable with my mother is that even since I was young, she was going to church often. Perhaps that inspired me to enter the convent. I have accomplished siblings also. My brother is a medical doctor. Also, my sister is a medical doctor. We really value education. That's one thing that is really, you know, highlighted in the family. So I entered the convent in 1994 as a practicing lawyer in the central. I was working in the Central Bank of the Philippines. And then I had experiences also in other fields because I'm really committed to service and advocacies. Since I was a student, I really want to serve people, to be of help to others. And I was driven with academics and service as well, because I believe that in life, we have to create a brand, a personal brand, and a legacy. And we really need to come up with something which is of value. So perhaps due to the influence of my mother, I entered the convent, and then I really believe that we have to make our life meaningful by developing our full potentials, our God-given talents. And then when I was assigned in the education ministry as a religious sister, well, I was deliberately excited about it because I believe that education is service intensive and teaching is a noble profession imbued with a mission to educate and form the young minds to become responsible and productive professionals and citizens. I believe that education is the best investment in life and it pays the highest interest and a multiplier benefits in across disciplines. That was an opportunity for me to be of service to others and, of course, to care for people because I believe that leadership is really an opportunity to serve. It should be mission driven with people skills, high degree of spirituality, and ethical leadership. And I go for competence and character and relevance and innovation.
I love what you're all about right now. This is like a breath of fresh air, because as we're seeing in the news and that in the West, it just, I've even heard of some schools updating their math curriculum to be more about social justice causes versus like the math curriculum itself. And so I just really love what you're talking about, how first ethical leadership should be mission driven and you have to develop people skills. I think this is really important. I spent $50,000 to help research what drives the needle for success in business. Everybody was arguing about the science of this and the science of that. And I wanted to figure out what does the research say? And we found 8 critical success factors. And one of them is self-efficacy. And you've already hit on a bunch of those items. One is self-efficacy. First is demonstrating certain personality characteristics. It's also leadership skills. And a big part of leadership, not having a vision. You have to be mission-based, but I think that comes from values. And so what leadership skills, a lot of that is self-awareness and a lot of emotional intelligence and communication skills and adaptability from our research, at least as it applies to business. For a lot of businesses, their strategic plan is where the vision comes from. And we're talking purely business. I'm not trying to contradict what you're saying. I'm just saying, I love what you're saying, because already you're like checking boxes that I have in a spreadsheet for what it takes to be a leader. And I'm like, yeah, it's a lot of people skills and ethics. We actually discovered that corporate social responsibility drives increased profits in companies. So this means even if someone doesn't have an ethical bone in their body, right? Even if deep down they're like, whatever, they're Lucifer incarnate. If their goal is to survive in business, the only way to carry yourself is to really serve others, your staff, your clients, your customers, your vendors. And not just short term, but long term, right? Business is a long term game. So I just love everything that you've been saying so far. That's fantastic. So
what you said is interesting, and I agree with you, because I also go for a business model in education, which is not the traditional thing. I think without a box, not only out of the box. And I anchor the business model in education on service and care for people and the environment. Mm-hmm. And I believe in a human-centric compensation package.
Yes.
Because when we care for people, they will take care of the school and the organization. And people who are happy are productive. And when we speak of compensation, it's not only about salaries, actually, Daryl.
Yes.
Actually, based on service, we can only retain good people when we take care of them and they feel positively about the working environment. So it goes beyond salaries.
Yeah.
We have to factor in relationship,
yep,
the working environment. So I believe that when we care for people as the central factor in the compensation package, we care for their well-being, and we promote the development of the people, the stakeholders, including their families. And we also think of the tangible and intangible benefits and the working environment, which is conducive and healthy, less stressful. I just would like to give you a concrete example. In our university, we have people welfare and enhancement program. So it's really holistic. It is multidimensional, not only professional development, but also personal, social, spiritual, moral, and physical. And we extend it to their families, for example. We have travels. So we have an ASEAN cultural trip every year. We started it in 2015 to different Asian countries. And we include the families.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's fantastic. Then,
yes. And then for their educational benefits, it's not only for first or two children, but we extend up to 4 legitimate children. So if you are a tenured employee in our university, regardless of your position, Sir Darrell, you can be a cleaner, a janitor, a driver, a security guard, and you are entitled to educational benefits of free tuition from grade one up to college. You
Wow.
choose the course up to four
Wow.
legitimate children. Imagine we have janitors who have professional children
Yeah.
because of this program. And it's
Yeah.
always standing ovation during graduation when their children graduate. And then we know that there are maintenance personnel. So that's only a sample. And we have health benefits. And you know what? During the pandemic, more than 2 years, we paid our employees full compensation and benefits,
Wow.
even if they were not here.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
And they were so touched by it, and then their families included. And we believe that care for people is really the basic thing that we have to consider, because in an organization, we deal with people. People are the ones who make the organization great.
Yes,
And then
yeah.
we inspire them and compel them to be at their best, because we take care of them, we develop them, then it becomes holistic. So we believe in a holistic kind of education, the development of the full potentials of the person, and it is multidimensional. So not only mental, physical, not only academic. So it's really a convergence of academics, values formation and spirituality, and also social responsibility, because we teach them that what you become, what you have are God-given. They're blessings, and you have the accountability and the responsibility to develop them and then make good of them and then cascade them to the community, help other people, pay forward.
Yeah,
So
100%.
we also have service learning integrated in the curriculum and instruction. So our students from kindergarten up to graduate school, they are aware of service, serving others, like caring for the environment, and then contributing something to social transformation in the local level, in the national level, and also in the global community, because we also implement the 17 Sustainable Development Goals of the United Nations. We had a primer as early as 2016. So we have advocacies and projects caring for the indigents, the indigenous people, those in the peripheries, the marginalized, the poor, the needy, the marginalized, the prisoners, and then the abandoned children, the orphans, the battered women and widowed mothers, and those are problems. So the delinquents, we make sure that we serve the community. So research, we go for it because we have to innovate. We have to create knowledge at the service of people, at the service of the community. So we have a brand wherein we highlight service and care for people and the environment, so that our students, they do not only study and graduate because of the diploma and to have gainful employment. Of course, we promote employment and entrepreneurship. That's really the goal of
That's
every graduate.
yes.
But then more than that, we transcend. You have really to give back to other people in terms of what you make out of the knowledge that you have gained. Meaning, the degree is only instrumental to the contribution to society and how you become a blessing to other people.
I love this.
Because in the manner of developing yourselves, you also become a blessing to others.
Yes.
and you create legacy, and that's your personal brand. Education and value formation that we form our students. And as an institution, we go for the positive convergence of quality, technology, and sustainability. Quality is really important because when in school, we have to make sure that the content and the delivery of the lesson is really of high caliber, high quality. Otherwise, you cannot attract enrollment. But we also believe in technology-enabled learning. Of course, we have high-end facilities here. We have digital learning. We have ongoing digital transformation. We have high-plex classrooms. We have hybrid delivery because we have more than 1,000 international students. By the way, we are an international university, an autonomous university. And we have students who are in other countries.
Wow.
That's why we have high-plex mode of delivery. But we also believe that technology is only a tool. What is important is how technology will benefit people, how technology will enhance learning, how it will make the students more engaged, the teachers more facilitated of differentiated instruction.
100%.
So we make use of high advanced technologies and educational applications to enhance learning to the extent that we maximize the learning outcomes and we touch on the cornerstone of the essentials in education.
Yeah.
And now, the core is really the person, the person.
Is that a challenge for you to maintain? Because as the president, you, I'm guessing, and I may be wrong, you have to know what this cutting edge technology is capable of and how to do it, and that kids can't accidentally use it to now be on adult websites. And you can't just delegate it to someone. I feel like you have to be involved, and that must on its own force you to constantly learn and be involved in this. Is that a fair statement?
Yes. Because actually, Daryl, I'm also teaching in the graduate school and I'm using the digital platforms. I have students in other countries and I enjoy it. As the president of SPUP, St. Paul University Philippines, we have adopted cutting-edge technologies, educational technologies for a fact. And then we guide our students in their use of high-end technologies so that they will harness the power of new technologies to provide solutions or create solutions to real-life problems. So we have robotics, we have coding education. By the way, from grade one, we already exposed the children to coding education and they were able to create AI fabrications. We have an AI and robotics laboratories. That's why you saw the hackathon event in the website.
Yeah.
The students are really encouraged to invent and create solutions using technologies to prove technology-enabled solutions to
real-life
problems.
Right, so, yeah, we use a lot of automation too, and that's really, for people that are listening, that's really important is that it's great to have technology and it's great to have these tools, but garbage in, garbage out. It's almost better to do something manually at first to make sure you can produce a result and then automate it because it just depends. It's not about the automation of the technology. It's about delivering results, and that's, I think that's what you've been talking about. And because you mentioned that before, like it's not just about the fancy tech. It's about making sure there's a solution that's being provided. Like problems are markets, right? Solving a problem, delivering this. All a company is a group of people helping another group of people. And they do it via a product or service. But technology allows you to scale that. And like you mentioned, like we're on different sides of the country. And thanks to this technology, we're able to. So in some ways, we're almost part cyborg. Because we're using extensions of our physical self. Yeah, I love this.
And then what is important is the value behind. Meaning that students are able to create and invent technology-enabled solutions But what is important is the values, how the inventions will be the solution and intervention to the difficulty and concerns and problems of people.
Yeah. Now, may I ask, this is a church organization. It's a for, because you mentioned you have a business model education, like you have a, your education model is like you're business minded. So I'm trying to understand this. Is this a for-profit school, your church?
You know, yeah. We are a non-stock, non-profit educational institutions, and we are a congregational university. So we are mission-driven. It's not for-profit. Right, we are religious sisters. We don't have salaries.
I thought all that, but you're talking about paying for all these things for other people, and I think it's great. But that's why I was wondering, like, is this a balance? Forgive me if this is very personal. This is a balance sheet for the university. Obviously, you have to generate the income somehow to pay for this stuff.
I understand what you're driving at. Of course, we are solvent because we make sure that we are aligned with the principle of value for money, meaning investments must create value added aspects in the whole educational system. So before we invest, we undergo the cost-benefit analysis. And of course, we think of ROI, return of investment. But as I told you, we are concerned not profit, but how we serve the stakeholders, how we care for people, how we develop them, what becomes of them.
I love this. Yeah, I agree. Because I know some people, they think that they misinterpret the gospel and they think it means like money is bad. And I think if you don't have money, you can't help people. So money, like make the money. And as we mentioned before we hit record, I usually don't put Jesus or anything in my emails, but I recently sent an email out to my email list and I was talking about how Judas got the money. And that it's not about the money because he got it, but then he wanted to give it away because the money was just a tool for something else.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah, I think what you're saying is really important. That was the message of that email, that how you make your fortune matters. The terms on which the wealth comes to you are important because Judas got the money and he couldn't give it back, you know,
yes.
At the end. So I just, yeah.
Yes. Because quality education is expensive because when you provide quality education, that means you have to invest in good facilities. You have to qualify and train your teachers and your people. And then you really have to invest in training. You have to invest in research and then infrastructure. So quality is really multidimensional and you need resources for that.
Yep.
You cannot sustain quality without the resources, of course.
Love this. Because there's lots of struggling business owners out there that they're like, I'm in it for what I'm doing, not for the money. But you should be about both. Like you should be about both. You should be about what you are delivering and helping people and saving them. But if your business, if I snap my fingers and you had an extra $100,000, how many more people could you help with your business? So I feel like in some ways, people use this as an excuse because they're shy about marketing and selling and they feel like they're being pushy or you know what I'm saying? They don't. And I often, my response, I would like to know what your thoughts are on that. For me, I often say either you don't believe in your product enough or you need to make it better. Like you either need to make your thing better or you don't believe in it. You should go find something you believe in and then be an advocate for that. Because otherwise you're not helping anybody if you're not. Because like markets are unknown and unknowable. If I asked how many people are in market to buy a car today, we don't really know. We can have estimates, but we don't know the actual number and it changes constantly. But everybody can recognize excellence. So if you are pursuing excellence at solving a problem, that will stand out in a market. And so but to be excellent, you do need to have financing. Like you can't, I think that's, I don't, what are your thoughts? I see you collecting your thoughts there. So I'm just
Yes, I agree with you. In fact, I'll give you a sample. I mentioned about service learning, that it involves advocacy for people. We have programs of helping other people in the community. We train them for livelihood skills. But after we train them, we tell them to identify particular business or entrepreneurial ventures that they would like to embark in, and then we provide them with microfinancing, small capital, but we provide capital because, you know, they will be frustrated even if we train them for skills, but they don't have tools. Capital. We really need resources. We can help a lot of people, of course, if we have resources.
I love that. And micro, I actually read the book Banker to the Poor, which was, I guess, the godfather of the whole microfinance movement, and at least in India. And I did a course at the World Bank when I was working in Tokyo on how to audit microfinance. I actually didn't pass. I failed the exam and I didn't go because I was leaving Japan. I'd been there 3 years and it was near the end of the trip. So I didn't get a chance to go back and do it. But I know a thing or two about microfinance. And I also learned, which I thought was really impressive, that by especially empowering female entrepreneurs, that it had an exponential ROI in the communities. Because when women became successful, they would pay for school fees for the kids and medicine for relatives and training and tools for the men and that. But unfortunately, I'm afraid to admit, often when the men became successful, especially if they didn't have religion, they often would invest the money in drinking and travel and women and things like that. So in the early days of microfinance, from my understanding, they focused specifically on empowering female entrepreneurs, and it would pull entire communities out of destitution. Because the women would band together and just support one another, and they would fix the house and they would save money and they would do all this. But again, the men, we weren't as wonderful to the whole community like that. So it's a partnership. That's why man needs women.
Daryl, values can really determine what you do with your money. Mm-hmm. So if you have the proper and positive values, then your resources will go a long way. That's why we educators, we need to make sure that it's a balanced and holistic kind of education that we provide to the students, so that when they gain employment and they become successful professionals, then they will know how to share to others and to care for others. Values can be a multiplier of benefits. The effect is really impactful, particularly generosity, friends. That's really basic.
You are like glowing with love. I don't know if anyone said that to you, but you really are. I'm not trying to just praise you or anything, but I just love everything you're about. You're just really hitting on the things that I think really matter. What would you recommend if there was an entrepreneur or a business owner listening to this, and maybe they're just starting out and they're struggling? What would you recommend? If I know it's very general, vague advice, but if someone's listening to this right now and they're just having a hard go and they're stressed out about what they're providing, what would you recommend? Are there fundamentals? Or is there a checklist? What would you suggest?
It's more of knowing yourself and what is your passion. Because you will derive strength from your passion and interest. Your commitment, your advocacies, your work, your service, your energy, and your momentum, particularly long term, will be a matter of what you really want to do with your life. Where your heart is.
Yeah.
For example, in my case, I decided to become a religious sister. So I go for loving service to people, loving service to the people, to the students, the teachers, the employees, to all the people that I encounter, and to take care of them. Because our tagline is making a difference. And then the love of Christ impels us to do things that we are not even capable of imagining. It's really interesting, Daryl, when you are so passionate about something.
Yeah.
You don't really care about difficulty, about obstacles. You are just focused on your goal and the destination that you want. And, you know, the resources are there. When we have advocacies and we have programs for the poor, it's so difficult. But when the idea is clear and then we present to some funding agents what we want to do to help others, then they say, okay, that's a very good idea. We will fund your projects. That's
yeah.
It.
I love this. There's no sales pitch. There's no high pressure sales. There's no arm wrestling.
Darrell, the most convincing and persuasive manner of getting resources will be authenticity,
yes,
sincerity, simplicity, humility, and then focus. Focus on what you really want to do.
Yes. Yes. I love you. You are just on fire, sister. I love this. I love this. Because I always say that problems are markets. Problems are markets, not demographics, not psychographics. A soccer mom isn't your market. A soccer mom is a stereotype of a person experiencing a problem. There might be, maybe there's a lake, and that lake is the problem. And around a lake, there'll be lots of birds. And some birds will eat ants. Some birds will eat nuts and fruits and berries. And some birds will eat fish. And some birds will eat other birds. But they're all around a problem. If I started a business helping connect people with jobs, homeless people need work and high-powered CEOs need work. So it's the same problem, but there's two different stereotypes and two different, you know, experiences people want to have. It's if there's a basketball game, you can watch it streaming online. You can pay for a ticket. You can pay a more expensive ticket to be right on the court. You can pay a weird price to be up in a box in a comfy room, but it's the same game. And so different stereotypes want to solve a specific problem in different ways, different price points. And so I just love what you're speaking to right now. Like just the act of service, that's what it is. It's not about selling ice to Eskimos. It's not about the latest persuasion hack that if I say these three words fast, I'll manipulate them to buy. It's none of that. It's just have a great, excellent solution to a problem. Believe in what you do. Be authentic and simple. I love it. I love it. You're hired. I don't know what I'm hiring you for, but I just love it. I just don't know why these fundamentals seem to be so lost on a lot of the world. So I think this is great. I think this is so good. So can you maybe speak to a little bit some of the habits that you think are most important?
Darrell, I just want to mention about the element of trust.
Trust. Yes, yes.
Before COVID, we were marketing, of course, we were promoting, of course, just like in every
right.
school,
right.
you want to increase your enrollment. During COVID, the schools were closed. So many of the schools really died in enrollment, particularly the private schools. In our case, we focused on what can we do for people? We're not thinking about really profits and getting enrollment. So, of course, we were concerned about promoting, but
right.
we took care of our employees. We reached out to our students digitally, the parents, what they need, how are they? What I mean, we were just sincere.
Yeah.
And we were just, you care, you love, you care for people. So how are you? What can we do for you? Is there anything that the school can do for you to lessen the pain? So there were those who died of COVID, who got sick of COVID. We have a school of medicine. So our students volunteered. Our faculty volunteered. We have a school of nursing. We have a school of pharmacy, medical healthcare. So we have social work. We have, of course, education and then psychology and so on. So we encourage the students to come up with some programs to help one another and then to connect with the school, to connect with people who are in need. So think, what can you do instead of crying and be afraid of what's going on? Why don't you come up with something concrete that will be of help to others? So we frontliners, the hospital, something like that. And at the same time, we promoted and marketed our school. There is a difference when you market in words and you market in deeds.
Oh, that is powerful.
There's a saying that the taste of the pudding is in the eating.
Yes.
So you trust the brand, education, business, product, service. You trust the brand when you use it, you experience it, right?
Yes.
So because we were able to reach out and immerse with the, to the people in society in terms of service and care, you know what? Our enrollment increased tremendously during COVID.
Right. That's fantastic. That's so fantastic.
And of course, you really have to undergo the post-COVID or post-pandemic transition, the difficulty, the uncertainty that go with it, of course. But what is remarkable and interesting is that we increased in enrollment.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it was not difficult to convince people to study at our school because they say that it's conducive, the ambience, and then kindness begets kindness. And when you are the parent, you want education with value formation. That's the added component
I love
of
that.
The education that we offer. When we market, we have to come up with a differentiation factor.
Yes.
We have to delight the customer, not just relate with them. So the differentiation factor is not only academics, but also spirituality, social responsibility, and the value formation that will be a lifetime
That is
value added.
I hope people are taking notes. I'm on like my third page already. And a lot of this stuff, not to detract from anything you said, but none of this stuff is necessarily rocket science or new. There's nothing new under the sun. It's just so clear and succinct. It's just very well said, so focused, no fluff, just sincere and simple. I love it. I love it. I love it.
And
what do
then,
you
Darrell, I just want to mention that during COVID, some of our students had financial problems because their parents lost their jobs or businesses bankrupt. What we did, especially for the third year and fourth year, who cannot continue going to school, who wanted to drop out because they cannot pay, we offered scholarships. So we told them, as much as possible, we don't like drop out. So we accepted promissory notes. We accepted payment in kind. By in kind, Darrell, we were paid with vegetables.
Yep.
We were paid with food.
That is the foundation of business.
In cash and in kind. So sometimes cooked food or whatever in kind, fruits. But anyway, we were so happy because they were able to graduate.
Yeah. Yeah. This, what a blessing. This is, I love this. I love this. What do you feel are some of the greatest mistakes that you see people making? We've talked a lot about, obviously, your philosophy on
things. Darrell, I think the difference is when you think of something and you start thinking of money, when you think of something and you start not with money, but you start with service, and what you can do for people will buy your idea, and then money will follow as a matter of course.
Yeah,
because people will not give you money just for the heck of it, but people will pay for something for value.
Yes,
the value behind is what makes the difference.
I love that. I had a past guest, he used to call it his grow through love strategy, that you try to love your customers, you love your staff, you love the stranger that you're trying to turn into, you know, that you're trying to turn. And this guy graduated from MIT and Harvard. And he was like, that's the simplest I can make it for you. Just grow through love, just love on people and grow through love, grow your business with love. Like I just, yeah.
Yes. It's love, so passion, honesty,
yes.
service,
yes.
commitment,
yes.
passion, yes. passion, because business and entrepreneurship, they really anchor on passion, passion, love, and because your passion will not be sustained unless the reason is love for something. You love to do something. You have the passion for something.
Yeah.
And you will really be successful.
And you really, there's a lot of things that naturally flow out of what you're saying. Like, for example, we haven't talked about like turning a one-time buyer into a multi-buyer or a subscription buyer. But you did talk about reaching out to your customers and just saying, what else can we help you with? How are you? What's going on in your life? Reconnecting with people, finding ways to not lose customers over price, accepting different forms of payment. There's just a lot of lessons here that just stem out from the simple, like from the simple things that you're talking about. And some of it maybe is work, but that's what I kind of love is that you're really trying to marry technology with service, which can allow amazing, phenomenal scale, right? Like you can have 100, 1,000 people on a Zoom meeting from around the world. You can't easily organize that same meeting in person physically, right? The resources required are infinitely more. And it's like I have an email newsletter. It goes out to 10,000 people. If I had to personally deliver 10,000 messages to people's houses, you know, if I had to write it and print it and we had to make the ink, so someone's got to press some berries and put it in a jar to put it, like, that's just so much work versus having the technology that allows us to do. I always think that whenever I drive down the road, I always try to be grateful for the men and women that sat under the hot sun to pave the road for me so I could just get to where I'm going. Like, even when there's a traffic jam, I try to not focus on the traffic jam because I'm riding in a vehicle that I didn't know how to create. If I left someone in the woods with just a couple of sticks and a lighter, how long until they could come back with a smartphone that they made themselves? Like, there's so much of what we do that is built on the service and gifts of others. And in some cases, people dedicated their entire lives to this stuff. And we're at the tip of the spear of that, of all the people that have come before us. And so again, it comes back to just the only way to do business is to really take care of people. And it sounds like you have no space in your mind for fear or for worry or hesitation and doubt. It just sounded like there was an emergency and we acted to try to serve. And how do we help? And how do we do it more? And then you figure out like, what is it going to cost? And I love how you're just so frank where you're like, great education costs money. It's expensive. You're like, if you want the best service, we got to provide the reason. Like you can't make something from nothing. Well, you can, but you can't. It takes things. You can't bake a cake without the ingredients. No, I think this is fantastic. It's so fantastic. So what do you think holds a lot of people back? Do you find that people come to the school or maybe even with the parents? Is there something that you feel really holds people back?
Yes. We do innovate with design thinking. Because in design thinking, you start observing and getting data and through survey and feedback from your customers, from the parents, from the students. And then based on what you observe and what you gather, you empathize with their difficulty. You empathize with their demands and needs. And then from there, you create a solution. And that will be the start of the innovation. And then you explain that to the parents and they will really be loyal, your loyal customer. For example, we do exit interview. By the end of the school year, we explain to the parents the achievements of the school and we get feedbacks from them. How else and in what ways and means can we improve our services?
Yeah.
And then based on their feedbacks, we empathize with them. We create solutions and innovations. And then we promise them, next school year, you will have this. You will have this innovation. We will have this gadget. We will have this program. We will offer this. And they are.
I love that. I wish I had an award to give you. I don't have an award here today to deliver, but I think what you're doing is great. So, now, where do you think the future of things are going? There's so much happening with AI and people are worried about, and I'm sorry if I'm doing this again, but I'm hitting you with like more than one question at a time, but I'm asking about where the future is going. But at the same time, I love your emphasis on I mentioned this earlier about performance-based end result, concrete, like the words that your language you're using, having a concrete solution, end result-based. Some people are talking about like universal basic income, and I'm just going to, the government should support me. Like, obviously there should be support for the poor, but I just like, where do you see the future going? Because some people are talking about AI replacing us all, and then humans not having any jobs to do. And then what are we going to do? And we need universal basic income so I can sit on a beach all day and just cloth. And like, that's what my question is. Like, where do you see the future of this going?
Daryl, although I've read a lot, I heard a lot about where AI will bring us, we're not afraid of ChatGPT replacing teachers and encouraging students to cheat on their essay. But what we really see is how to emphasize on values so that the use of technology will be based on the approach and principle of techno-savvy humanist. Meaning, you empower people with advanced technologies for the good use of people to have quality life, so that they will not be bothered with repetitive and hazardous tasks that will be given to robots and machines, and they can concentrate on more meaningful humanistic endeavors in life that will make life more meaningful and worth living. Because we have a problem with existentialism. You just, days pass by and you don't really find meaning on that. But if we consider technology as an enhancement,
a tool
of meaningful life, a tool, how to make use of it, and we think of people as the ultimate beneficiary of technology, I think it's just a matter of perspective and approach. That's what we're doing in education. We have defined policies in the use of ChatGPT and AI. We have parameters on what the students can do with ChatGPT, and we really emphasize on their cyber ethics.
That's a good one.
It's really inculcating the proper values in the heart of people, so that their minds will also be educated on doing things with technology that will really create solutions, not problems.
Yeah, I agree. I've read a great book called The Beginning of Infinity by quantum physicist David Deutsch. And he talks about the Turing test is supposed to be the ultimate determination of if AI is sentient or not. And essentially, it's if a human can speak to it and not know it's a computer. But he argues that all that proves is that it fooled the human. It doesn't prove that it's actually sentient. And through his reasoning about what real AI would have to be, I don't think we're, my personal opinion, and not necessarily anyone asked me, but it's my podcast. So I think it's just a tool. I think just like accountants and bookkeepers back in the day, they used to have to do the math themselves by hand, and then calculators came out, and the productive ones suddenly were way more productive because they didn't have to do 1 + 1. But the ones that made excuses or weren't really enjoying the work and were the bottom performers, they lost the excuse for why they weren't as productive. And I just see that the same as with these AI tools that we have. And until AI can have its own visions of life purpose and its own creativity, it has to create new knowledge from nothing. It can't recombine knowledge into something. It has to create something completely unique and creative of its own passion and merit, which I don't think it's ever going to get to that. I think it's more, like I said, it's a tool for us as humans. And we already right now, like I asked, to call you, I clicked a button and all these things happened in the computer. And it's just a tool. It's just a fancy calculator. I agree with you with that on 100%. And we actually use it on this podcast. Once I'm done, little tech boy, we've now set up automation tools that once I'm done and we finish this, I'll upload the audio file. And in less than 3 minutes, I'm going to have a title, SEO show notes for the show. I'm going to have a 30 question workbook, and it's going to pull out 30 quotes from our call. And it's all going to be transcribed. And that's something that would typically take a couple of people a week to do. And now it's in a few minutes. And what has it allowed me to do? It's allowed me to almost 10x the number of interviews that I can process. And so it's just a tool. It's just a tool. It's not, no one's losing their jobs. Only the people that aren't really passionate about what they're doing.
Correct.
So this has been so inciting, so impactful. Sister, I want to say, is there anything I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
May I just share that?
Yeah.
I'm concerned of being future ready and moving forward. And in education, from the point of view of educators, we really need to exemplify a positive disposition and mindset that will help us to adjust to the disruptions, the uncertainties, the stressful situation that we are now, and to take care of our physical and mental health and well-being. Also, we need a resilient attitude and skills to easily adapt to changes, to cope with adverse situations, and bounce back amid setbacks. And then we need an agile approach in tasks and responsibilities that really deliver efficient, effective, prompt, and value-added and high-impact results and services. And we have to think in terms of integral framework of transformative. It could be in education or in any form of institution. It should be transformative because we cannot be glued to the traditional way of doing things and ways of thinking. And we need quality and techno-savvy attitude. And we go for sustainable development for a better future. Because we can think of a better world unless we think of peace, justice, equity, environmental stewardship, and then inclusive education, so that we can have a better future. And then, of course, we don't forget about strategic management and leadership. It could be in business, it could be in trade and industry, in education, whatever, founded on connectivity to the organizational and personal vision mission that will really promote the welfare of people, and that will be responsive to societal needs and supportive of national and global peace and unity. And of course, let us not forget empathy. Empathy and compassion towards people. People, because for all that we think, for all that we do, the ultimate beneficiaries will be people.
Yes, and our children and future generations.
Yes.
I love this so much. Sister, you have had so many beautiful words of wisdom on this. I think I'm on my fourth page of notes. I do these interviews all the time. I really think people probably want to go back and listen to this again and make sure they got it all. If you haven't, listener, go check out spup.edu.ph. Sister, is there anywhere else they should look to if they want to connect with you or the university or ask questions? Is it just that URL or is there somewhere else we should direct them?
Yes, we have our website.
Okay. So just the spup.edu.ph. Go check it out. They are on the cusp of technology. Even though they're from a remote place in the Philippines, they're connecting worldwide. They're winning awards. They're on the cutting edge. You've listened to an hour of just pure, beautiful wisdom right here. I can't thank you enough for your time. I don't know what I was expecting, but I just am just so grateful that you shared this time with me. And I just want to thank you, knowing that you have your own community, your own students, your own staff that you could be trying to serve, that you're coming and helping serve my audience. I just appreciate that so much.
Thank you.